What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kicking It with Cornelius and Courtney. As you can tell from the title on today's podcast, we're going to be talking about how to be vulnerable with your partner when it comes to showing your emotions. I think this is something that's really important because I feel like if you don't address your emotions, I think you talked about this on a previous episode too, about if you don't address the underlying issue, then it kind of bleeds over into stuff that's not even really a problem.
Yeah.
So we'll break it down to the basics first. For those of you who don't know my husband, well, I'll let you tell him what you do.
I'm a master mindset life coach and essentially focus on cognitive behavior techniques, rational emotive behavior techniques, emotional intelligence, things like that.
Yeah, so I feel like it's important to break it down to the basics first and talk about emotions and feelings, something that a lot of people cringe when it's time to talk about, but it's important and it's needed. So I'll let you tell everyone, what is emotional intelligence?
In short, emotional intelligence is our ability to be able to effectively understand the emotions that we're experiencing as we are experiencing them, and how to essentially like take control of them.
Okay. So is it almost like the same as being self-aware?
In a sense, but it's a little bit more to it than that. So like, let's say, I think the numbers were that like only 64% of the world's population was like in the dark, unaware of their ability to understand the emotions. So they led by the emotions, if that makes sense. They controlled by the emotions. Whereas 36% of the world's population had the ability to understand the emotions and what the emotions were coming from. So instead of being controlled by the emotion, they can manipulate the emotion and like remain in control of their life, their decision, their choices.
You know, for whatever reason, when you said that, it kind of made me think of karate and people who do karate, because they teach you that even if like you're being bullied, like you could use that anger and then, you know what I mean, directed towards something, but it doesn't have to have like a deathly impact. You have to be able to control those emotions.
Yeah.
I know you talked about that a lot. So what would you say are some tips on how to even, like, what's the first steps to even being able to become emotionally intelligent, I guess I'll say?
That's a good question. I would say some steps you could take in order to become more emotionally intelligent is really, like, figuring out, really, like, it goes back. I would say one of the first things to do is taking what's known as the Adverse Childhood Experiences Test.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 10-question test. And essentially, by answering it, and it's no right or wrong, it's just based off of your own personal experiences in your life, but based off of the Adverse Childhood Experiences Test, you're figuring out what things happened to you in your youth that still play a huge factor in your adulthood, right? And sometimes I think we live through life where we don't understand that there are past traumas and experiences that we've faced, that we've experienced, that will permanently stain us at a genetic level for the rest of our life. And we end up being responsive to things without knowing why we're responding the way we are. So I would say first step is being able to take an assessment for yourself.
And do you feel like as you become more emotionally intelligent, it becomes easier to control your emotions instead of being led by them? Or can we even control our emotions?
Yeah. So I would say the more emotionally intelligent you become, the more aware you become of the emotion.
Okay.
Becoming aware of the emotion allows you the ability to manipulate the emotion. So essentially we say thoughts create the emotion, right? So the formula would be thought, emotion, decision, action, and then the results and things to follow.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, and that's why I say it starts with the adverse childhood experiences, because our thought on a situation comes from, you know, an experience that we've already gone through. And if I have a negative thought on a situation, that negative thought could influence a negative emotion. And then that negative emotion, by not taking that pause, break, right? Let's say a person gets upset because, I don't know, somebody touched their laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of grabbing a laptop or walking away, taking a breather, they punch the person in the face, right? So it begins to, like, pick up from there, right? Because the decision to punch the person in the face, which punching in the face would be the action. The decision came from the idea of, hey, they just disrespected me in front of all these people. Now everybody thinking down on me. They gonna think they could try me. So you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. It seemed maybe, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like, although I understand this is something that we're not trying to teach our girls, now that we know what it is, and you could be brought up, you know, learning, does that also come with age and just maturity?
Technically, no. The reason I say that is you have a lot of people that live through life their entire life who still
That's true. No
idea or understanding of what emotional intelligence is or how to use it. As a matter of fact, there was a research that was found that says, like, being able to increase your emotional intelligence will determine your level of success in life. So some people think that having a high IQ, like intellectual quoting,
mm-hmm.
gives you the ability to be able to find success in life. And that's not necessarily true. You know, you think about IQ only being about 10 to 15% of your success. And if that's the case, where does the rest of it come from?
Yeah.
Right. So emotional intelligence, EI, or emotional quotient, EQ, has a huge role in us determining our level of success. As a matter of fact, a lot of Fortune 500 companies and, you know, recruitment companies that are out there are now starting to do searches to find people who have a higher level of EQ.
Mm-hmm.
Because people with higher level of EQ do better in the workplace at managing workplace stress, right? Influencing the behaviors of those that they manage. So not necessarily. I don't think age always comes with, it's like they saying, you know, you get older, it makes you wiser. There's plenty of people that's older that still make dumb decisions.
Yeah, that wouldn't necessarily be considered wise.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess by whose standards, but it depends on how you look at it, I guess.
Yeah.
You live long enough, you'll go through something, but that doesn't mean you have to learn through what you go through.
Yeah, age doesn't always equal maturity either.
Right. And I feel like now that I look back at it, just, you know, getting married in those younger years when we were 19, and I'll say through our 20s too, I know that I wasn't taking the time to process emotions on the level that I am now.
Yeah, nor was I.
And definitely not talk about emotions. It was just like, you made me feel like this, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't like, I feel like this because, you know, X, Y, Z. We weren't in that place at all, I don't think.
Well, let's talk about that key phrase right there. You made me feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard concept to accept, but nobody in the world can make you feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to what we were saying a little bit earlier, like, thoughts create emotions. So if we feel a certain type of way about anything, then it's our perception on the situation that caused us to feel this emotional response. To say somebody else did that is saying that we have no power, control, and influence over ourselves, and we are willingly taking our power and control and giving it to somebody else to puppeteer us.
Yeah. Which I agree with you. Not saying I don't disagree with you, but I feel like that's the hard thing to do when you're in a relationship with somebody, especially when you're living with a person and your feelings are, and you know, your time are invested into this person. Like, realistically, they'd be the closest people to you who had the power to make you feel some type of way. You get what I'm saying? Like, I know we control how we feel, but let's say if somebody do something that was either intentional or not intentional, let's say a lie, and they hurt your feelings, like, it's easy to say, like, well, you can't get that person the power to, like, you know, make you feel hurt. But at the end of the day, that's how they actually made you feel. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I understand that. So you're talking about the difference of, like, somebody else having the power to influence your behavior.
Yeah.
As opposed to you being able to take control of that behavior.
Right.
So again, like, it's all an assessment concept, and that's a great question. Because I'm sure a lot of people have that question. Oh, well, it's like they say, it's always people closest to you that can do the most damage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason they can do the most damage is because your thought is they should not be mm-hmm. the ones to hurt you.
Right.
And they already know your critical vulnerabilities.
Right.
So sometimes people use your critical vulnerabilities to influence your behavior, but it's up to us to identify, recognize that is taking place and not fall into the trap.
Okay, I get what you're saying. So it's kind of like the process. I don't remember exactly the steps, but if you feel the hurt, you feel the anger, that's the emotion, you identify it. But now, because you identified it, you can kind of sit with it instead of that deciding what your action is going to be.
Yeah.
An irrational action.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a financial tip but I like to use this on an aspect of emotional intelligence too. So it's called the 10 by 10 rule. If you go into the store and there's something that you want to purchase and it costs $10 or less, you give yourself 10 minutes of breather room before you make that decision on buying it. And if after 10 minutes you still feel that same level of exhilaration, you can go ahead and purchase it if it's $10 or less. Mm-hmm. Emotion's a little bit difficult because, like, we sometimes like to feel, right? We want to have that intense response, and that makes us feel alive and makes us feel like we're in control. And sometimes it gives some people an excuse. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that we take that same financial idea and you apply that to the emotion. So you find yourself in a high emotional state, take a pause, take a breather, give yourself maybe instead of 10 minutes, 10 minutes is a long time depending on the time and situation you're in, but walk away from a situation for at least 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Before making an emotional decision or making a response to that. And be cautious of the thought that you have while you're waiting in those 5 minutes, because the preponderance of that thought can also influence that behavior.
And I think we talked about that before on a previous episode, how I said Cornelius is like a let's just sit and talk about it right now, squash it, move on. It don't got to be that serious type of person. But I'm the type of person where I got to walk away. I got to take a minute. I got to like sit with my emotions, process my emotions, and then come back and then clearly say, I felt like this because of XYZ. And I feel like lately I've been doing a pretty good job at connecting it, like you said, to past traumas and being like, and it's more so because of this. And in that moment, it made me feel this way. And then he'll understand, oh, okay, it's not directly that action, but, you know, whereas that action on any other day wouldn't have been a thing, this triggered her and this caused that reaction. So then it kind of teaches you what your person's trigger points are, I guess I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, in a day's time, we live in a high state of irrational fear versus situational fear. So situational fear is like, let's say, like, I walk outside and then there's a bear standing right there at my door growling at me. Mm-hmm. That's situational. That's like something that's realistic. It's taking place and I'm in the moment. Mm-hmm. Irrational fear is like, okay, we getting into an argument and, you know, you grab my arm, I grab your arm. And then it triggers some past traumas from your past, mm-hmm. from your childhood. And it says, because of this happening to me in the past, this is likely to happen again. This person going to take advantage of me or hold me against my will or try to abuse me or, you know, whatever. I don't know whatever happens in people's life. Mm-hmm. So that becomes partial situational, partial irrational. Situation is that you did feel some sensation that triggered a response due to a past event. But somewhat irrational because you don't necessarily know that that's about to occur.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Does that make sense what I'm saying? So, yeah. For like a person who wakes up late for work, in their head, I'm guessing, right? They start to think, "Oh man, I'm gonna get fired." So then,
that's me.
You try to hurry up. You try to hurry up and get dressed.
Yeah.
But now, this level of anxiousness, this anxiety builds up. Now you're speeding, mm-hmm. and then you see a cop. Then it's like, oh my goodness, let me slam on the brakes. Now you potentially could cause an accident. So,
and it set the tone for your whole day because you obsessed over it in your head.
And this is why I'm real big at, like, this is a little bit different, but setting the tone, I'm real big at not waking up with an alarm clock. For that reason alone.
Not waking up with an alarm clock? Not well, everybody up with can't afford not wake up with an alarm clock because some people can't, like, will oversleep.
Okay, so if you need an alarm clock, adjust the tone instead of being something that's so harsh or maybe something that's a little bit more subtle.
I get what you're saying. I'm thinking you're saying not setting an alarm, but you're saying the actual sound of the alarm clock. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a jarring factor that affects us at a subconscious level.
Oh, okay, yeah, I could see that. Yeah, because mine is music. It's like nice, soft music that wakes me up. So I guess I never thought about that. But that's a good tip.
Yeah, so just to clarify that again, situational fear is fear that is triggered by an immediate threat in a current situation, right? That's situational. Yeah. Irrational are the fears that we start to build up in our mind of things that may happen, mm-hmm. like trying to predict the future when we don't know.
I'll be very transparent in this moment and give you guys like a really good example of that. So I do have a history of rape and some trauma there from my childhood years. And when we first got married, like, if I was like, I don't want to talk about it, like, I'm finna go in the living room. If he would even, like, position his body in front of the door, I'd be like, wait a minute, like, let's talk. Immediately, I was in fight mode because I was like, oh, he got me fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, I was thinking, he bigger than me. He taller than me. He think he finna overpower me. Like, I had all these emotions going through my head of what I potentially felt like could happen. And he had never displayed anything that showed me that he would, you know, hurt me in that way. But that's what my thought process went to because of the trauma that I faced in the back, you know, of my head. So now that we're older and now that we know that, then he gives me that minute. He doesn't position himself in front of the door or things like that. If I just try to walk out or, you know, I go in the living room or do whatever and need a second, then he gives me that minute. And then we come back and then it has given me a chance to cool down. What are you, is it still hard for you? What are you doing in those moments where, like, I need a breather? Just ignore it?
Yeah, but that's what the control would come from, right? Like, mm-hmm. So let's clarify this too, right? Like, I don't want y'all to think that, like, oh, you know, this dude said he had massive mindset, life coach, his life is perfect, he has no issues. That's not the case. I still feel and have to process the same emotions likely that other people would have to go through and process. The difference is, do I respond to it immediately or not?
Mm-hmm.
So we just try to give yourself that breather. Like, there's a book called Anger Management. We're not sponsored by this, but I mean, I recommend this book to everybody. Anger Management by Tony Bennis. And it kind of goes through the process of what we talked about, like adverse childhood experiences, but then also the contemplation of thought. So if I find myself in a high elevated state or anxious state, typically, I'm rehearsing events that have already occurred of past trauma, and I'm bringing that past into my present. And then that increases my level of anxiousness.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I enter into fight, flight, or freeze response.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna take one. You're gonna go into some level or a different state. But then now what's happening is because of learned reactions based off of past traumas that also built conditioned emotions. So it's a stepping stone.
And while we're there, that's a good place to kind of like land and bring that back to the relationship aspect. How do you become vulnerable with a person? Because I feel like I thought in the beginning that you could just have like blind trust and vulnerability. But now I see like vulnerability, I think that takes time to cultivate.
Yeah, it takes time.
I think it takes a lot of time. And I feel like it takes you feeling safe. I feel like it takes you trusting that person. I feel like it's like so many, you've been aware of how you personally feel in the situation. Because I feel like you never used to, no, not I feel, you never used to just be like, this is my feeling on this reaction. I feel like the first time, well, no, that wasn't the first time, but one of the first times where I saw you have like that kind of big reaction was when your mom passed. And I think that was like the first time where I had seen you be vulnerable to that level to be able to like cry or express emotion in front of me like in that way. Because I always have a joke that I'd be like, oh, my husband's a hitman, because anybody who met him, they'll know, he'll be like, oh, that's funny. Or he'll be like, oh, man, that scared me. It's always one tone. It's always cool. It's always like, you know, not cracking under pressure. So I feel like it humanized you in a way, I guess I'll say. For one of the first times, not humanized you, because obviously...
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. It humanized me to the people around me.
Right, right.
And, yeah, and I see, trauma, that's a good point. Let's talk about that. I think it humanized me to the people around me because they see me in a vulnerable state that otherwise I don't express.
Mm-hmm.
And I think internally what that did for me is that caused more isolation.
Hmm.
Because I was open and vulnerable.
Yeah, it did at that time.
Yeah.
You're right.
So...
Hmm.
But that trauma re-sparked trauma from my childhood, which is what turned me to be more like this hitman idea that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And stoic, right? Real, like, kind of cold, standoffish. Because, you know, it hurts more to be vulnerable and be hurt.
Yeah.
Than it does to not show the emotion.
Yeah.
At all. So.
And that was hard for me at the time because I was like, what the heck? I was thinking, like... Of course, I'm your spouse. You should, like, turn to me. But you just was, like, quiet about it. Like, I think it was, like, almost a year before I asked you, like, hey, can I ask you a question? No, it wasn't. It was after my sister had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
After Jesse. Yeah, Jesse passed away. I asked you. I was like, do you ever cry about your mom? Like, do you ever just have days where you just, like, cry about it? I feel like I'm getting choked up about it now. But it was just like, I felt like my strong emotion wasn't normal because I had never, you know what I'm saying, yeah. seen it from you. And you were like, shoot ya. Like, for yeah. one point, it was like I cried every day when I was on the way home from work. That's like when I would talk to my mom.
Yeah.
So I feel like what made you over the years, and you can, I think this would be good for the men to hear too, because a lot of men are not vulnerable in that way. Like, especially Black men, they have that stigma of having to be, you know what I mean, strong all the time, and are raised with like that mentality. Were you raised with that mentality of having to be strong all the time? And how did that affect your adult life?
Ironically enough, it was a yes and no. And I know I never answered questions directly.
Mm-hmm.
It was yes and no. I was taught that I could be vulnerable, right? My mom did teach me that.
Mm-hmm.
But life experiences show me vulnerability is not a quality that men should possess in order to survive and thrive,
mm-hmm.
based off of where I grew up. So it was a mixed emotion on that. And on the situation with my mom, it took me 5 years to be able to life manage that. The first year was the hardest. I cried every single day. And then after that, you know, it was like maybe every other day or once a week or something like that. And then some days it just random thoughts would come up. I'd go get in the shower and I'll cry in the shower because, you know, under the water, nobody can see you cry anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But 5 years, you know, of dealing with that and running from the idea of that pain and never truly wanting to express that caused more issues.
Yeah. And I feel like it caused issues even in the marriage. Yeah, too, in the 100%. Beginning.
Yeah. You got to let yourself feel. You got to be able to go through the grief process and trying to fight and resist that. It's just unnatural for us as human beings. So what I typically would say is, like, you got to feel, heal, and then, you know, process. I won't say let go.
Mm-hmm.
Feel, heal, and process. People would like to tell you that time fixes everything. Time doesn't fix shit. Like, it does not. Through time, we learn how to deal and manage better. Potentially, mm-hmm. we there's an option for us to learn how to manage things better, but it don't fix it. It still hurts. It still sucks. There's still days that are just absolutely bad because, like, you know, here we are now getting ready to transition out of the military, and, you know, every year we have a military ball, mm-hmm. except for last year. And the year she passed was the year we was gonna take her. Like, so mm-hmm. this is a constant reminder, and it's always hard. You get what I'm saying? And it's just like, mm-hmm. I've learned how to breathe and process through those emotions now, whereas in the past, I didn't have the ability to do that.
Yeah. So what do you think? Because I feel like even before you became a mastermind life coach, I feel like even before that, you had kind of started being more in tune with your feelings and emotions and sharing, like being more vulnerable. What do you feel like happened that got you to that place? Or was it just an age thing?
Internally, though, I didn't show it. Exteriorly, I was out of control. I felt like I was just falling in a deep, dark pit. And, like, small things that were irrational things would really piss me off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, at what point do I start trying to take control of my life back? Because I got tired of feeling like that. I got tired of feeling like I was always falling. You know, like, I don't know if y'all ever had a dream that, like, you slip and fell off a building, but somehow the ground was never there and you just kept falling. And I felt like that. And every day was like that. And it was like, somehow, you know, I was attracting these things that justified my emotions. It just got old after a while.
Yeah.
And I felt, well, what I'm doing now ain't working. Maybe I could try something different. And, you know, I started doing a bunch of reading, research, and, you know, we went through our own personal things, you know, with my mental health, you know, your mental health and some other things in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in trying to figure out a way to put myself in a position to be beneficial for the family, I began to learn more about me. So then I began to apply those things mm-hmm. to myself, and then by applying those things to myself, because I wanted to see if it worked before I tried it with anybody else. And I'm happy I did.
I am too. Me too. And I feel like that shit bonded us in a whole different, on a whole different level too. Because I feel like with each experience, as you go through different just crises and challenges in life, then, you know, you end up looking at the other person and being like, wow, this person really rocked with me through all this shit.
Yeah.
But I feel like you have to give that person a chance. If you had this person in your life, this person is your spouse, this person is your partner, you guys are living together, dating, whatever the relationship status is, or even in a friendship, you got to give that person a chance to show up. A lot of times we try to do things all by ourselves, and I don't think ever in history, was there ever anybody who did anything all by themselves?
I don't think you can.
You can't.
So, I was thinking about this the other day, interestingly enough. And I think a lot of times we like to take the credit of saying, I got here on my own, I hustled, I grind. Mm-hmm. But realistically, like, you know, if you drive a car, somebody else built that car. Right? Mm-hmm. Somebody else made the tires for you to put on the car. So in some way, shape, or form, right, even aside from that, if you eating food, unless you harvesting it yourself or whatnot, like, somebody else has kind of, like, went out and laid the fields, mm-hmm. you know? So, like, in some way, shape, or form, we've always been assisted by somebody else, whether we identified it or not.
And then even if you do, like you said, get it out the mud or however they want to say it these days, it still doesn't matter because let's say you were an artist and you had to hustle your way to the top.
Somebody had to buy.
You had to have fans.
Yeah.
Somebody probably helped you sell a mixtape.
Yeah.
So I think that realizing that, man, it gave me a chance to be soft. And I feel like I haven't, like, been soft in a very long time, maybe like in the very beginning of our marriage. But I feel like just different experiences and age, I feel like it almost hardened me in a way. So I feel like I'm getting back to being soft. Does that make sense?
Yeah, trauma has a way of of causing us to adjust, you know. So like we were talking about earlier, you know, like emotions and different states. So like the emotional state, the state is a psychological the state is a psychological feeling that we experience. The emotion is the state is a physiological state of what we're feeling. The emotion is a psychological interpretation of that label that we put on it. So, like, trauma sometimes creates the view that the world is tainted and we start to lose that hope and faith mm-hmm. in society, which is what was happening to me, especially coming back from Iraq, having my traumas from over there, and then coming back to America and seeing certain things in America that I saw, and then, like, the lack of respect that certain people have for military, and then, you know, you go fight this war in other countries, you come back, and then there's still this idea of prejudice and racism and all this other stuff. So, like, humanity, you just started to almost not be a thing. Mm-hmm. So, and that hardens you because you have to go into a self-preservation and protection mode, right? And you don't feel that you have a space to be able to be open or vulnerable.
Right.
So it's like, how do they say, steel sharpens steel, iron sharpens iron.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you've been in the flames, you either melt or it forges you.
Yeah. And I feel like that kind of, like you said, I feel like that's a good place to kind of stop, because I feel like that's going to get into the next episode too. We talk about mental health and we'll share with you guys like how we kind of navigate that. But I will say this last thing before we get ready to head out. When you come to your person and you tell your person how you're feeling, the other person can acknowledge how you feel, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to apologize. Apologizing yes. and acknowledging are two completely different things.
Yeah.
Like, don't get the two mixed up, because just because, like, for instance, let's say me and my husband always roasting each other. That's like our love language. You know what I mean? Like, we just be goofy with one another. So let's say that one day I'm feeling self-conscious about everything. I'm just having one of those days where I'm feeling super self-conscious, and he'd be like, oh yeah, your makeup look off. And then I get an attitude this day. You know what I mean? And really, it ain't nothing that is wrong. The makeup maybe is off. Or he just trying to help me out. Or he just being silly. One, two, or three. But either way, I have like this big reaction, and then it catches him off guard. So if I come to him and I tell him, hey, I was having a day, but that comes with, like you said, being self-aware, having the, you know, what you call it, the EQ level?
Yeah.
To be able to assess that and then be able to say, okay, I'm feeling this way because I woke up and I was already kind of feeling off anyway. So then when I come to him and I tell him, hey, babe, like, I was already having a day where I felt real self-conscious. So when you said that was like the cherry on the cake and I just lost it. He doesn't have to apologize for what he said if he meant it.
Yeah, now we've been there. There's been times I say, I'm not sorry for what I said. I'm sorry for how you felt about what I said.
Yeah.
Right, because sometimes we don't intend for the damage to be done. And it just, you know, surface versus root problems. And
you blunt anyway.
Yeah.
Like, he's blunt anyway. To know him is to know that it's just, like, the way that he talks. So, over the year, and I feel like over the years, you have softened the blow some.
Yeah, because you got to realize, like, again, like, I was dealing with my own issues, trying to process that, and, you know, but I can't respond to the world and everybody around me as if they were me, because that's unfair to y'all.
That's true.
And so I had to make an I had to be mature enough to make that adjustment.
Yeah, meeting a person at their level, is that what it's called?
Yeah. Another thing, too, I would like to say is, like, be kind to yourself. Mm-hmm. It's hard to go through this world and we build this resilience against everything around us, and then we think that we're helping ourselves. In reality, we typically are doing more harm than good. And I'll leave this and I'll be done, because this emotional ideal can go on. I mean, this is a whole nother, like, this can go on for a long time, which is why I went into this business. Also, we can put the link below. Mm-hmm. If y'all are interested in, you know, reaching out to me, having some questions, or, you know, maybe sitting down with me as a life coach, we'll put the link at the bottom. It's atogenouslifecoaching.com. But take some time for yourself. When we wake up in the morning, we're giving the world what we have of us, and that's draining. So at what point do you refill your cup for you? Take 5-10 minutes of your own time as soon as you get up to do something for you. And learn how to love yourself, man, before you give everything away to everybody else.
That's the truth. All right, I think that's a good place to land right there. I think that was good, Papa. All right, guys, we're going to head out of here. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
All right, ciao.